Tackling Your Taxes. The new federal tax law was supposed to simplify filing and reduce personal income taxes. And for many people, it has. But others are surprised to discover that instead of getting a tax refund, they owe the government a substantial amount of money. There are a lot of reasons for this, from an adjustment in the tax tables to a cap on the amount of the state and local tax deduction. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, two tax experts join us to explain the tax code changes and their impact on people and businesses in Maine, and to help all of us better plan for next year's tax season. What are your questions? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Have you started doing your taxes this year? You might find some surprises, thanks or no thanks to changes in the tax code. Our experts today will explain what you need to know. Joining me in the studio, Maria Gwynn, who is Vice President of Spinnaker Trust and Director of Spinnaker's Tax Group. And Daniel Dworen, he's principal with Albin, Randall, and Bennett, certified public accountants. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you done your taxes yet? Any surprises? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Thank you both for being here today. Dan, characterize this change in the tax code. How big was it?
Well, it was a very significant change in the tax code, the most significant since 1986. Generally, for individuals, the changes were simplification for most individuals. But if you were a business owner, things get very, very complicated. And there's a lot of gray areas in the law, a lot of uncertainty that practitioners are dealing with. The IRS has been pretty good about clarifying some of those issues, but there are still others out there that are a little murky.
Okay. So, and many, many people in Maine are small business owners, many single proprietor businesses out there. Maria, the new tax law was called the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Its title implies that people will see tax cuts. Are they?
Some people are seeing tax cuts. Some people haven't gotten to the point where they've put their taxes together to see what the implications are. Those who are using advisors like Dan, our clients, we work with advisors like Dan, have proactively been planning. As Dan said, this act was simplification, but there are some changes that we didn't have answers until this fall. There are some answers we're still waiting for. Tax reform has affected software. It's affected a lot of different aspects. So even though the name of the game is simplification, at this point, some people are seeing, I believe, 38% of the people who have filed, we're seeing refunds that were less than what they were expecting. And I think we'll get in a little later as to changes in the withholding tables and why some people are seeing lower refunds. But it's not as easy to say, yes, everyone is seeing changes and they're having lower taxes, or no, people aren't, because there's different items of this act that are affecting everyone.
So at this point, who does it appear is benefiting from the new tax rules and who is not benefiting from the new tax rules?
I think overall, the policy analysts thought at the outset that about 80% of people would see a reduction in taxes, 15% would see an increase, and about 5% would be neutral. And over the summer, we did a bunch of projections, and I'd say that was fairly consistent with what we were seeing in our client base. There are some people who have a significant amount of itemized deductions who historically have had that, who've been hurt by this act because they've lost those deductions. And even though their tax rates have gone down, they haven't gone down enough to compensate for that.
And those people are, there's more of those people, my understanding is, in states like Maine, where there are higher state and local taxes, correct? I mean, Maine, Massachusetts, New York, California, this is where we have a higher percentage of people who have, I don't know if the right phrase is, taken a hit by the fact that they cannot write off state and local taxes or as much of them as they used to be able to.
Absolutely, yes. There's a $10,000 cap on state and local taxes now at the federal level for a deduction for individuals. And the states you named are what are termed high tax states. So residents of those states are really seeing a big reduction in the amount of their federal itemized deductions.
So people really who are middle class in that they still fill out their own tax form. They're not very, very wealthy, but they might have a high mortgage on their house, or they might live in a town in Maine that has high local property taxes. Those are the people who may be most affected.
Right. They could be, but they're also seeing a reduction in their tax rates. So the combination of those things, most people will see a reduction. But if you have not only the items you mentioned, but maybe significant investment expenses through a firm maybe like Maria's, where you have an investment advisor, if you have a lot of itemized deductions and then all of a sudden a lot of them have gone away, those are the people that are really getting hit.
Okay. What about students with part-time or summer jobs? They usually didn't have to pay taxes. That's changed, hasn't it?
There is something called the kiddie tax rules that is was put into place so that the wealthy could not pass income down to lower tax rates. For those people who are dependents under 18 who do have earned income from summer wages and then have unearned income, they report on their they used to be able to report on their parents' return at their parents' rate. One of the simplification changes is now they report their own return. If they do fall under kiddie tax, now instead of using the single rate, now they're going to be subject to the trust and estate tax rate. So for someone who's a student with a W-2, they would see a tax decrease. For those with unearned income who are above the threshold, potentially under the kiddie tax rules, they might be paying more tax than when they were filing within their parents' return.
Wow, I'm not sure I got my head around that completely, but a regular kid in Maine who's got a summer job, will that student's return change?
No. If you just have a summer job, as Maria pointed out, because it's earned income, that is still going to get taxed at the child's rate. But if they have any unearned income, which would be like interest, dividends, capital gains, maybe their parents set up some sort of a investment fund for them, that income potentially will get taxed at a much higher rate now than it used to.
Okay. A lot of people who thought they might be getting refunds find that they instead owe money. At this time, that's linked to, you guys mentioned this a little bit, and I want to go more into it, the new tax tables and withholding. My understanding is that there was some issue with how the tax tables were rolled out and calculated. Is that true?
That's true. Treasury was looking at the tax tables from an economic standpoint. So they wanted to generate spending during the year. So they adjusted the tax withholding tables so that people would get more money within each paycheck during the year instead of getting a refund when they filed their returns. A lot of individuals look at their tax refund from a behavioral standpoint where, okay, I am getting a chunk of money. When I file my return, I'm getting a refund. I'm going to use that for a trip. I'm going to use that to buy a new car. So if you're seeing some money coming in an extra paycheck during the year, it's not an amount necessarily that you're going to be saving or that you're really seeing that there's a big effect of that. You're seeing more of an effect when you're filing your tax return and you're used to having a large refund, and now your refund is less, albeit because you've gotten the money during the prior year instead of the IRS having it and you getting it when you file your tax return.
Let's say you're not aiming for a refund, but you're aiming for what experts advise, which is not to have a refund and not to owe. Given that scenario, and we're going to, for the sake of argument, assume that people are trying to have a perfect amount withheld from their paycheck, were employers given the right guidance this past year to make that happen for their employees?
The IRS changed the withholding tables. They developed a new form W-4, which an employee gives to their employers. The IRS was letting people know throughout the summer and fall to please look, adjust your withholding, fill out a new W-4, give it to your employer. I think a lot of employers were letting their employees know to check their withholding. So I think guidance was out there. But then again, with some of the other aspects of tax reform, changes to itemized deductions, There was a lot more detail that needed to be filled out with this Form W-4. The IRS taxpayer advocate, she is someone who works for the IRS, but she's on the taxpayer side. She's an advocate for taxpayers. She is suggesting that after tax season, the Form W-4 be changed so that it is easier for people with a lot of just basic W-2 income, interest, not a complex situation, can easily fill it out because it's not a form to easily be filled out. She said it took her a couple hours to fill this one form out, and she's got a complex situation. So she's looking for changes in that aspect.
Dan?
Yeah, I think the other thing that happened, too, is the IRS kind of saw this train coming at them down the tracks because in December and January, they issued guidance that they were going to ease back on the underpayment penalty provisions this year. And they've eased those up a little bit, requiring there's a 90% threshold to have paid in. Historically, they've dropped that to 85%. And there are some people that want to see that go down even more. So I think they realized the mistake they made, and they've made a small effort to try to rectify that.
All right. Well, we're talking about taxes. We have two CPAs with us in the studio. If you'd like to join us, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Dan, you mentioned that there are impacts on business owners as well as individuals who file a traditional tax return. I know there are all sorts of impacts depending what kind of business you are, but why don't you give us sort of like a greatest hits? What are you seeing and hearing already?
Well, some of the biggest changes that happened were in the areas of depreciation was one area where they now allow 100% bonus depreciation for big ticket items that you buy that traditionally you've had to capitalize and depreciate over a period of time. So you get a tax deduction over a number of years. Now that deduction is allowed immediately in 1 year. The other big thing is something called the qualified business income deduction for sole proprietors or people that own an interest in a flow-through entity like a partnership or an S corporation, where certain types of businesses will be allowed up to a 20% deduction for the income generated by that business. And this is one area where there's been a tremendous amount of gray area. The IRS has been pretty good about getting out guidance. There are courses that are offered that are day-long courses just on this one topic. And there are going to be lots of potential controversies over it going forward in terms of positions people take on return about it, on their returns about it. But, you know, that's one burgeoning area for tax practitioners, really, to brush up on the rules because it's a whole brand new concept that we haven't had to deal with before.
How does this affect, Maria, investors?
It affects investors. We want to make sure that we're mitigating the tax effect for our clients with the investments that we're doing. We don't want tax to drive the investments, but we want to make sure that we're helping to mitigate the taxes with the investments that are chosen so that the clients can meet their goals. We're looking for estate planning opportunities as well, all tied into this. So we are very much making sure that what we are doing is not creating tax issues for our clients and working closely with advisors like Dan to make sure that we're not investing in something that will have ramifications on the tax side.
I know when this was going through Congress, a lot of nonprofits were concerned about the impact on them. Can you explain why there was that concern and let us know if it seems to have played out?
There was concern because with the increase in the standard deduction for a lot of people, they wouldn't necessarily have an incentive to make a charitable contribution because they weren't going to get an additional tax benefit by doing it. And some early data that's come out indicates that those fears were probably well-founded for people who aren't necessarily the big donors of the world, that there has been some scaling back of the amount of the charitable donations they've been doing. But they're also seeing that at the higher end of the spectrum, there's been a little bit of an uptick in charitable contributions from the more wealthy. That's very preliminary data.
Why would that be?
I'm not really sure exactly.
Because those people are still itemizing?
Maybe they're getting the benefit of the tax rates and feeling a little more generous with it, or at least some people are. But I don't think – I mean, the uptick has not been very significant. There's been a small uptick there. It's not anything to be too excited about, I think.
Is there an advantage to doing your taxes using one of the online services such as a TurboTax than just doing it the old-fashioned way? Has the new tax code changed sort of the calculation of how I ought to do my taxes?
I think anybody that can do their tax form by hand probably deserves some sort of an honorary college degree, frankly, because it's very involved. There's so many interrelated computations that go on. You change one number here and something changes over there. You really do need, in my opinion, unless you have just the simplest of situations, you need to use some sort of software product. Technology has really allowed the tax code to become crazy in many respects, because I don't think they could have passed a law like this before the computer existed. It just would be too much of a burden to calculate this stuff out.
I want to talk about Maine taxes. There was a lot of talk in the legislature about tax conformity after the federal tax law was passed. Maria, what exactly does tax conformity mean, and what does it mean specifically in Maine?
What conformity means is when the federal government passes a tax law, some states will tax based on the federal law. Some states will say, I am going to conform to one piece of that tax law, but we're going to subject our residents, our non-residents, to this piece of the tax law in a different way. So some states conform to federal, some states don't have taxes. Some states like Maine conform to some extent, but not to other extents. What the state of Maine has done is they've conformed to some of the changes. The state of Maine now has the same standard deduction as federal. We still have a personal exemption for the taxpayer and the spouse, but we no longer have an exemption for any dependents. So for exemptions, there's no federal exemption anymore for the taxpayer and the spouse. Maine doesn't conform to federal law. We do still have an exemption for the taxpayer and the spouse. We've expanded the corporate tax brackets. Federal law, as I think Dan will get into, has decreased the tax bracket to 21%. The state of Maine has changed their tax graduated rates for corporations, but they do not match federal. We now have a dependent exemption tax credit, which is $300 if you have dependent children and you take a federal child tax credit. So in some aspects, Maine agrees with federal law. Some aspects, we go in a different direction.
All right. Well, we are talking about doing your taxes on Maine Calling. We'll have your comments and questions when we get back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do UMaine's Call-In Center, presenting traditional Irish ensemble Danu, March 10th. Tickets at collinscenterforthearts.com. Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners address climate change with energy audits, window replacement, and insulation. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And Maine Ocean School in Searsport, a new public magnet high school with an ocean-themed curriculum. Admission information at maineoceanschool.org.
A new flood control system in a New Jersey town could make a big difference for residents.
Without flood control, it was only the next natural disaster before you were wiped out.
Now developers are pouring in, and many worry that could mean low-income Latino residents will be priced out. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered is today at 4 here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is a media partner with this year's The Maine Jewish Film Festival, which returns this year with over 40 films in 6 Maine cities, starting this Saturday and running all next week till Sunday, March 17th. The films will be shown in Portland, Brunswick, Lewiston, Waterville, Rockland, and Bangor. Maine Public members receive a special ticket price. Go to mainepublic.org and click on events for all the details.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today on the program, tax advice from the experts, and what a year for it. Joining me today, Daniel Dworan, CPA and principal with Albin, Randall, and Bennett, and Maria Gwynn, vice president of Spinnaker Trust and director of their tax group. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll start in Elliott with Gail. Hi, Gail. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello. I had my taxes done with AARP. They've done them for several years for me. And this year, it was quite a shock when we started to do the tax.
Gail, you're cutting out a little bit. You said when we started, okay. Go ahead.
When we started doing the taxes, the gentleman told me I'd be getting about $200 back from the federal government. And then I had to submit a paper, a 1099, and something from Social Security for Medicare. And it jumped from $209 that I was going to get back to $1,800 that I owed the state, the federal government. I don't understand where that came from. And it also went from getting back a little bit from the state to owing the state of Maine over $500.
Okay, Dan, you seem...
Right. Well, Social Security benefits can be partially taxable to people depending on what their overall income level. Up to 85% of Social Security benefits can be taxed. So it sounds like you got in a what's called an SSA 1099 form, and once that got put into the calculation, the result was an increase in tax for you, unfortunately.
Hmm. All right. Is that a change, or is that the same as it was before?
That's been around for a long time.
Hmm. Gail, thanks for your call, and good luck to you. We'll go to Carl, who's calling from Linnaeus. Hi, Carl. Go ahead.
Hi there. I did my taxes. And I will be getting more than I thought back. However, I did make sure earlier in the year that I had a little more taken out just in case, you know. So, but my one disappointment was, I mean, even though I have a huge standard deduction because I'm over 65, I couldn't deduct mortgage interest, sales tax, or charitable donations because it wouldn't come close to the standard deduction. And so to me, that dissuades or deters people from buying homes and from making donations. I mean, let's say I gave $500 to public radio last year. I couldn't deduct it. So that was a disappointment. But I wanted to throw in, after listening to some of your callers, many people started receiving more money and having less tax taken out this year. And so in the end, they owe it back, the taxes on that. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Right. People, though, I think when they saw their paycheck and saw that maybe it was a little bit bigger, thought, oh, that must be the new tax law. That must be what President Trump did for me.
Right. And sometimes that goes unnoticed. I mean, I get stuff from people who send in their tax material to me, and the envelope is not opened, you know. So it takes recognizing that fact. And sometimes a small increase in a paycheck doesn't register, but the big decrease in the refund at the end of the year makes a big impression.
Right. Thoughts on the rest of Carl's call?
Well, it's kind of a policy matter about, you know, how things are going to play out in the real world because of how the tax changes were. But I don't disagree with anything he said. Certainly, there isn't an incentive necessarily to buy a home if you're not mortgage interest is not deductible. There isn't an incentive to give charitable contributions if you're not going to be able to deduct them. There are certain strategies that maybe Maria can touch on the charitable contribution area, either now or later on.
Go ahead, Maria.
So what some people are seeing, Carl, and I'm not sure if this is your situation, if someone was able to itemize and when you now get the higher standard deduction, which is $24,000, so if you're close to that amount itemizing in the past, what some people are doing is an item called bunching. So taking the standard deduction in 1 year and then the next year doing charitable contributions that you normally would do in 2 years all in 1 year. so that you can take advantage of getting above that $24,000. So that's a technique some people are using. They're looking at more than 1 year when they're doing their taxes, saying, okay, I'm pretty close to the standard deduction. I don't want to lose my charitable contributions because I'm taking that deduction now. I'll hold off and do those charitable contributions next year so that I can go above that $24,000 for married filing joint. So we're seeing a lot more people are looking at more than 1 year at a time to try to take advantage of being able to itemize their deductions at least in 1 year, even if they have to take the standard deduction in another year.
So maybe people who used to write several checks every December will do it in January and December of 1 year and then not at all the next year.
That's correct, Jennifer.
All right, Carl, thanks so much for your call. An email from Mandy. Is there a tool to use at the beginning of your tax process to help decide whether to itemize or take the standard deduction? I use TurboTax and pay extra to itemize in hopes of getting a better refund. And most years they tell me the standard deduction is better after I've paid and done all the work to itemize.
Well, that's a tough one. I think the only thing you could do is maybe manually get a federal Schedule A and the old pencil and maybe work towards that honorary college degree I was talking about earlier with just penciling it out might be one way to do it. There may be other online tools out there for free that you could use. I'm not really familiar with any of them.
If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address is talk@mainpublic.org. If you send an email, make it brief, tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page, and we will go to a tweet. This is from Dan. My fiance and I both make about 12 grand. She got back around 300 and I got 1300 back. When we get married, how will this change?
Boy, that's a good one. it's so fact specific. I don't know exactly what impact that will have on your overall refund at the end of the year. At that income level, I don't think there would be that much of a difference between married versus single.
I would agree with that.
So I would, off the top of my head, would think that there isn't going to be much of a change in your overall federal tax situation.
An email from Stev. Isn't it correct that the lower tax rates last for only 3 years?
The rate changes are in effect through 2025. All the provisions in the new tax law go till that date.
And then what?
And then they have to revisit it. It's a question of budgetary considerations in Congress that they have a certain window of time that they look at, and they need to be able to fit the fiscal impact of the tax law into that. So beyond that time period, Congress will have to get together and figure out if they want to continue to extend this, or they're going to change it, or what's going to happen.
Another tweet. Do your guests think that the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017 seems to help the upper middle to lower middle class? Do they think it was well thought out?
Well thought out. Boy, that's a good one. I think it was kind of rushed in certain aspects. I know certain parts of the legislation, some technical parts required some technical corrections that still have not been done. You know, I think it really does depend on, it's very hard to generalize with this law. It really does depend on what your individual fact pattern is. And to say that people in a certain income level are going to have a benefit versus people in another income level, it's kind of a disservice because you really can't. It really depends on what the makeup of the facts and the characteristics are within the person you're talking about.
An email from Elle. Being retired with Social Security income and some investment income, I still have a very small amount of self-employment income. Under the new tax law, I understood that 20% would come off the total, giving self-employed people a little break. However, when I did my return using H&R Block software, the 20% deduction didn't happen. The worksheet indicated that REIT income and capital gains entered into the calculation.
Right. So the issue there is that it's kind of like a certain car commercial you might hear that talks about an up to. It was an up to a 20% deduction. So up to can mean zero, right? It's anything up to. It's a maximum deduction of 20%. And there are certain circumstances where that deduction is going to be zero. If you have a lot of capital gain income, it can work out that way because most of your taxable income is going to get taxed at capital gain rates, which are already a low rate relative to the ordinary rates. So in that situation, the 20% deduction can be eliminated.
An email from Jennifer. Alternative minimum tax. When does it start and how does it impact my taxes?
Well, the alternative minimum tax is less of an issue now. It used to be more of a pervasive issue for people. But under the Tax Reform Act that passed last year, they made certain changes to the calculation, and most individuals now will not face the alternative minimum tax. This is another one that's very hard to generalize about. You can't really say if you're at X income level, this is where it's going to hit. But we're seeing it in our client base that less and less people are subject to the federal AMT.
We'll go to Jerry calling from Bucksport. Hi, Jerry. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks. Quick call. The standard deduction at $24,000 and losing the $8,100 in personal exemptions that we got, I'm still coming out on the lower end of the stick there. That's a magician's trick. How is this supposed to help us?
It really was a magician's trick because the politicians touted the fact that the standard deduction had almost doubled while they didn't say anything about the fact that they took away personal exemptions. So when you add those two, when you add those two together, it's exactly what the caller suggested, that the overall impact of that change was not as significant as was touted.
And if you have children that were dependents, you lost those dependents exemptions as well. So there is an even larger impact in that situation.
Jerry, thanks for your call. We'll go to Peter, who's calling from Appleton. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. My son went back to college last year. He's 33, and we're providing virtually all of his support. He got a scholarship grant for $3,048 and W-2s for about $1,600. So his total income is about $4,727. I read that I can actually deduct him if he earns less than $4,500. I'm just wondering if the scholarship and grant is included in that or not.
I'm not sure off the top of my head. That's something I'd probably have to look up. But the scholarship and grants generally is not a taxable item. Whether it needs to be considered as part of the support calculation, I'm not sure.
And I also don't know that off the top of my head. I'd need to take a look.
Well, thanks, Peter. Sorry we weren't more help today, but I'm sure that somebody like Maria or Dan can help you one-on-one. Let's see here. Let's go to Mary in Facebook. Owing a small business in Maine, I've heard that claiming my usual travel expenses may be in jeopardy for the 2018 tax year, specifically gasoline expenses. Should I be concerned?
No. Travel expenses are fine. Entertainment expenses have been curtailed, but travel expenses are still deductible.
Right. Email from Stephanie. I am wondering how self-employed Maine residents are faring this year.
That's pretty broad. I think they probably fall within, you know, the 80% projection of people that would benefit from this. I think probably applies to that group as well, particularly with the 20% deduction that we talked about, or the up to 20% deduction being in play for them. That can make a real difference, but it really does depend what sort of occupation they have and what their income level is.
An email from Nelson. How much of my $430 of my eyeglasses are deductible, if any?
So one of the changes with tax reform was that you can deduct medical expenses above 7.5% of your income. So you need to do the calculation, that is if you can itemize, to see how much of that amount you can take.
Yeah, the hurdles are pretty high. If that's your only medical expense, then you're not going to get it. You need to have a lot of medical expenses to get over the percentage hurdle, and then you need to get over the standard deduction hurdle. Now that's even higher. So it's a tall mountain.
We'll go to Jim in Portland. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hi there. I had a question about travel expenses. I know you just covered it slightly, but I missed part of it. I was on hold. But in the past, I'm a sales rep. In the past, I've been able to use my mileage on my car, my business miles, as a tax deduction. I'm just wondering if that's still an option for 2018 tax year.
Are you an employee? Are you treated as an employee or are you self-employed?
Jim, are you still there?
Well, let me say that people who are employees and who try to deduct unreimbursed employee business expenses, that's a category of deductions that has been eliminated. So with respect to the previous caller, and I'm not sure if I interpreted her question correctly in terms of travel expenses, if you're a self-employed individual, and I think she did say self-employed, then those are still okay. But if you're an employee of a company and your company does not reimburse you for mileage, you just try to deduct that on your tax return, those deductions have been curtailed.
Jim, okay. Thanks for your call. Good. Yeah. And the phone number is 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to take another quick break. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Maine Masonic Charitable Foundation, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine. On the next Speaking in Maine, how the West and Beijing got China wrong, and is the China model sustainable?
China's strength lies not in brute power, but in its flexibility.
Nguyen Wang Ong is an associate professor of political science at the University of Michigan, and Yishen Huang is an Epic Foundation professor of international management at MIT. That's coming up on Speaking in Maine, Wednesday afternoon at 2 on Maine Public Radio. Do you or someone you know love classical music? Consider joining the Maine Public team as an on-air host for Maine Public Classical. We're excited and very enthused about our new classical service. Perhaps you can help us as we continue to provide the best possible classical music listening experience for our listeners. For more information, please visit mainpublic.org and click on About and then Careers. Thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling today on the program, Understanding the New Tax Code. Joining us today, Maria Gwynn with Spinnaker Trust and Daniel Dworin with Albin, Randall, and Bennett. Join our conversation and our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Dan, I seem to remember during the discussions about this new tax change that something about we'd be sending in postcards. People aren't sending in postcards, are they?
Thankfully not, no. I can't think of anything more unappealing than having my Social Security number and my income on a postcard in the U.S. mail. But what they have done is redesign the Form 1040. There used to be simpler versions called a 1040A and a 1040EZ, which they have discontinued. There now is a single Form 1040 that does fit onto a postcard. It's not the kind of postcard that you would send when you're on vacation, though. It's more of a political postcard, kind of a half of an 8.5 by 11 sheet. And the way the tax software is printing it out, it's basically using up half a page. So what used to be a nice, concise two-page form is now 8 pages with a lot of white space. And that's kind of unfortunate, but it does, I guess, allow political points to be scored by saying we put your tax form onto a postcard.
We'll go to Brenda calling from Portland. Hi, Brenda. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling because last year I claimed zero exemptions all year. I live in Portland. And I ended up paying back the state, even though I claimed zero exemptions and paid the most I could pay all year. I ended up paying the state back, and then my federal, I got half of what I normally get. That was last year. I am frightened of doing my taxes this year because I worked two jobs last year, even though I had one job take out extra money above and beyond the exemptions that I claim zero of. Any advice?
I think taking out the extra is what you'll need to do. You know, if you want to try to set yourself up to have a refund, the number of exemptions you know, at zero. The IRS did change the tables last year, so even if you didn't change anything, if you claimed zero the previous year and then claimed zero last year, you were going to have less withheld even though you still were claiming zero because the tables changed. So it sounds like you'll need to just ask to have some additional withheld.
And that's going to be my question to both of you. As you do your taxes this year and you see how the tax changes affected you and your family, what kind of advice do you have for people going forward? We've already talked a little bit, Maria, about bunching, but what are some other things that folks can be doing? Or is everything going to be different again?
I think I can guarantee you that everything will be different again at some point. But I think we've got some stability for a couple years. I think people that if you get your tax return done and you owe a lot of money, one thing that you definitely should not do is ignore it. You should file your return even if you can't pay. That's because if you file late, there's an extra penalty that goes in based on the amount that you owed. If you file on time, you can at least cut off that failure to file penalty. So don't bury your head in the sand about it. If you do have a balance due, file a return. And then the other thing is to think about your withholding for the following year. If you end up paying, you may want to take whatever balance that you owed on last year's return divided by the number of pay periods left in the current year and then up your withholding by that amount to try to cut that off for next year.
And the other item I would add is the IRS does have payment plans. As Dan said, make sure even if you can't pay that you file your return, you file an extension. And then the IRS does have guidance on payment plans. I would not just not pay. Then if you're going to owe the same amount the next year, it's just going to be a domino effect. So as best as you can, I would try to take care of that as you can.
Elaine writes on Facebook, I went from a part-time to full-time job. Nothing else changed. And for the first time, we owe the feds big time. We're a middle-income couple with a kid in college. There's something wrong here. So let's see here.
There's a price to freedom is what I would say. I'm not trying to be, cute about it. But I think in that situation, you just need to look at how much you're having withheld and try to adjust it because that seems to be what the issue is.
Alan on Facebook, for 2017, I had about $12,000 in itemized deductions plus the $4,050 exemption. For 2018, the standard deduction was raised, but the exemption was eliminated. We've talked about that. I guess the tax rates may have changed a bit, but on the whole, I don't think my tax cut amounts to much. I bet those making over $1 million got a very large tax cut. Is he right?
Probably. To some extent, there certainly are people at the higher end that did get a very big tax cut. Their rate went from 39.6 down to 37%. So, yeah, I think that is probably accurate.
We'll go to Rick, who's calling from Belfast. Hi, Rick.
Hey, how you doing today? Quick question pertaining to the legality of the new form. My last form that I filled out last year, my signature was on the same page that basically the information that I put in having to do with my income. This new form, because it's sort of like postcard, the first page is the signature, and the second page contains a lot of the information having to do with the income. So I just wanted to know if there's legality issues pertaining to these new forms or not.
I've not heard anybody raising that as an issue. There are elections and other things that need to be signed as part of a tax return that are not on, you can't jam it all onto the same page. So the fact that the signature is on a different page, I don't think has any relevance.
And I have not heard anything in that regards as well.
Okay, Rick, thanks for your call. An email from Saul. My wife and I have an Airbnb under an LLC partnership. We have our accountant file the 1065, and in the past, I used the Schedule E to establish the supplemental income or loss. The Schedule E has changed. How do I now indicate, as in our case, the 2018 loss from this business?
Well, Schedule E is still there. The 2018 loss will be reported on Schedule E, page 2. The part is escaping me right now, but it's right around the middle of the page. And it shouldn't be substantially different from the past.
Okay. Kathy on Facebook just did our first run through of our federal taxes. Every year we usually receive about $5,000. This year we have to pay $84. The only change is a slight increase in salary. Wow, what happened to the tax break we were supposed to get?
Smells like withholding to me.
I would agree.
That you're withholding the amount withheld changed.
That, you know, that's the first thing that comes to mind, but, you know, the fact it's very fact specific. So again, I mean, there could be something there that something else changed as well. But withholding sounds like it's the primary cause.
A tweet from the Maine State Library. While talking about taxes, please remember to point Maine tax filers to the form CP, where they can donate to the Maine Public Library Fund and other great causes. Let's see here. Justin emails us. Do you think it's ethical to change the tax code essentially in the middle of the year, changing the rules of the game in the third quarter, so to speak? Is that what happened?
Well, the law was passed in December of 2017, and many of the changes were effective in 2018. So it really didn't happen that way. Is it fair if they did it that way? Not necessarily. I mean, it has been done before that changes have been enacted retroactively, and that makes it very difficult. So it's certainly not the best way to do business.
An email from Devin. I live in Maine and work as a tipped employee in New Hampshire. My husband is paid hourly and works in Maine. Before we were married a year and a half ago, he would generally receive a large refund every year, and I would generally owe under $500. Since we've been married, we've owed a large sum every year. 100% of my paycheck goes toward taxes, and my husband has extra from each paycheck go toward taxes as well. Is there anything we can do to avoid owing taxes at the end of the next tax year? Yikes.
That's a pretty fact-specific question, and it's a little hard to believe that 100%, I take her at her word, I guess, that 100% of her pay is going to taxes, but that's not the way the system is supposed to work, that you pay 100%. So
we'll go to Chris, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to mention a couple of things. One, I totally do not accept this concept that our freedom is somehow proportionate to the amount of taxes that lower and middle income people pay. I think the real threat to our freedom is the tax breaks that are given to the billionaires and corporations like Apple, Amazon, Netflix, who actually pay no taxes at all. And what we're hearing here over and over again is that the lower and middle class people are, in fact, paying more taxes. Some of my income is derived by rental properties. Now, I have to pay property tax on each one of those rental properties. Before this tax change, I could deduct my property tax because that's appropriate. That's not money that I got to spend on myself or my family. That's money that I gave to another taxing agency. But now, that amount of tax income has been capped. So there's, for me, that's another $7,000 or some odd dollars that is no longer deductible to me. So for me, as a middle, I would say a probably middle income Maine person, my taxes are definitely going up. And so I just reject that flippant notion that somehow these tax changes are justified to sustain freedom when we have no threat to our freedom whatsoever. It's kind of a, in my opinion, it's an absurd thing to say. And that's all I
right.
have to say.
Yeah, I think I was taking a little out of context there, but in any event. And if you're talking about a rental property, I think you mentioned that with these real estate taxes, those are still deductible. If they're related to a rental property, it's just real estate taxes on your personal residence or any other secondary residence that are not.
So on a rental property above and beyond the standardized deduction?
Well, for a rental property, that's like a trade or business on the Schedule E that someone else brought up earlier. If you pay any real estate taxes related to the property that you're renting out, those are deductible without any cap. They don't fall under the $10,000. There's no standard deduction thing going on there. It's kind of a separate issue. It's part of the business.
All right. Well, Chris, thank you for calling in with your perspective. Galen on Facebook says, our refund is bigger this year. So somebody who is happy this year, one of the only people who's called or emailed in who is happy. What are the statistics? You said 85% of people are going to be receiving.
Well, I think originally they came out and said 80% of people would see lower taxes. That doesn't mean they're going to get a lower or bigger refund,
right,
or anything like that. Just that their tax liability would go down. 15% would go up and about 5% would stay the same. I think the decreases we've seen have not been substantial for most people, but there have been some decreases. And that's sort of played out in our experience, those statistics.
Jan on Facebook says the $10,000 maximum deduction is a big difference for Mainers versus folks living tax-free New Hampshire. And also, aren't we getting taxed twice?
Well, you know, the federal government levies a tax and the state government levies a tax. And historically, the federal government has allowed the state tax to be deductible without limitation until this tax law. And now they've placed a limit on the amount of state taxes that they will allow when you compute your federal tax. So, I mean, there are multiple layers of taxes. I won't argue with that.
We only have about a minute left. I just ask you for some parting words of wisdom, Maria. What are you saying to clients and friends as they look forward in this new tax world, in this new landscape that we're in?
As Dan stated, these taxes are here till 2025. So just to make sure that you're doing your taxes up front, don't be afraid of doing them and wait till the last minute. Depending on what your situation is, proactively plan, get help if you need help so that you don't fall into the same situation next year.
And Dan?
Yeah, you know, I'd agree with that. And I guess I would say that they're planned to be here till 2025, but certainly things can change. It seems like the tax code changes more often than I'd care to think about. And for those who are benefiting from this, I guess it's the time to take advantage of it. And from those who aren't, this too shall pass, I think. There will be changes, and I don't know which way they're going to go, but things may not stay the same. They will not stay the same. There's no question about that.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for helping us make some sense of this. Daniel Dworin, a CPA and principal with Albin, Randall, and Bennett. And Maria Gwynn is vice president of Spinnaker Trust. She directs Spinnaker's tax group. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as helpful links and resources at mainecalling.org. Today's program will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, join host Keith Shortall for a conversation about secularism in Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.